presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Florida coach Dan Mullen's pretty quickly becoming the mouth of the South, it would seem. A lot of talk from Mr. Mullen so far this offseason. He is at it again, and you might think in my role of chief Gator hater, I'd be ready to, you know, put up my dukes and be ready to fight against him, and I guess I always kind of am in a roundabout way. But my overall take on Mullen's latest barb or jab, not completely directed at Georgia, but also not directed at Georgia, if you get my point on that. Georgia kind of gets caught in the shrapnel of all of this. My overall takeaway on this may be a little different than you might think, and let me see if I can set up all of this way. I am a traditionalist. A lot of y'all know that. I joke all the time about the fact that in spirit, I'm essentially 1,000 years old. If you want to know how I think Georgia football should be, you pretty much just have to go look back to the 80s and say, what was Georgia doing back in the 80s? That's kind of the stuff that I think Georgia should still be doing now. I grew up in that era. I like that era, and I like classic traditional stuff. And that means for me, one of the sacred things when it comes to Georgia football is the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Yes, around here, that is what we call it. We'll always call it that. And we think that is a rivalry in its spot in Jacksonville that is worth preserving. And when I hear younger guys, younger people than me, talk up this rivalry and talk about how it is special, well, you know what? I feel really good about that. So let me give you an example. Go back to before last year's game in October. Isaac Nada, a guy who knows the state of Florida well, who knows the state of Georgia well, who knows these two programs really well, is an example in modern times of what I've grown up believing. That when it comes to that world's largest outdoor cocktail party, when it comes to those beach condos in St. Simon, or Jekyll Island, when it comes to all those, as Larry Munson famously once said, all those dog people who come down there and enjoy that and the property that gets sometimes figuratively, maybe in some cases literally destroyed. Well, listen, that's all a lot of fun for me, so I really appreciate it when a guy like Isaac Nada shows that same appreciation, which he did before this past year's game. Here's what he said then.
I spent a lot of time in Jacksonville. I lived there for about 8 years. You know, just playing in this game. I've been a part of it, you know, as a fan. I mean, it's awesome. It's literally split right down the middle, half and half. You know, it's kind of weird the way people file in because they're all out tailgating beforehand. So when everybody gets in there, it gets crazy. And it's just a really cool atmosphere. It's probably one of the best atmospheres in college football.
I mean, listen to the sound of Nada's voice when he says that. I'm going to take that to mean that he means what he says when he says those words, how special it is and how cool the vibe in the stadium is. And I'm an old guy, so I like old things. Cocktail party's been around for a long time. But to hear young guys say, I like it too. I'm playing in the game and I love the vibe around that. I believe it's one of the most special atmospheres in all of college football. That makes me really feel good. And maybe what should also make me feel good for someone who enjoys making that trip, as we did last year and have now for many years down to Jacksonville, is the belief of some that this rivalry game is never leaving the spot. It's always going to be a neutral site game played right here. It'll always be that split 50-50 crowd, and the Georgia fans will always get to enjoy their time on the beach, and the world's largest outdoor cocktail party will last forever. I mean, after all, that's something the Dog Nation Ship Towers has said on this program for a number of years, including going back to like 2017 even. Chip was on this program really banging that gong that for the people who think that one day this rivalry is going home and home, they're going to split time between Athens and Gainesville. Chip Towers says, in his mind, that's not what this rivalry is ever going to be about. Here's an example of what he said about this in the past.
Jacksonville wants the game there, and Georgia wants the game there, and Florida wants the game there. We're coming up on 100 years here before long, and I think we'll make that mark. They'll make it to 2033, and the game will still be played in Jacksonville.
So Chip Towers in the past has said that the bond, the tie that unites Georgia and Florida in the city of Jacksonville for this game, known as the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, it is so tight and so well-founded that he thinks this game's going to be in Jacksonville until at least 2033 and maybe beyond that. And I got to tell you, I'm not quite so sure as much anymore. I'm just not I don't know. I feel like there's a movement away from this game being played in Jacksonville. And I can't tell if it's accidental, and I can't tell if it's intentional. But one way or another, I think there's a growing sense of, is this really the place this game is supposed to be played? Is this really the best choice for Georgia? Because honestly, we don't care about what's best for Florida, but we do around here care what's best for Georgia. Is Jacksonville really the best spot for Georgia-Florida? And I believe that Florida coach Dan Mullen, who has been running his mouth the entire offseason, saying one dumb thing right after another, I believe that whether it be wittingly or in Dan Mullen's case, probably half-wittingly, unwittingly maybe, I feel like that he has said something this week that I think potentially puts the future of Georgia, Florida, and Jacksonville in danger. And for the people who care about that, I don't think that's too much of an overstatement, although maybe slightly exaggerated just a little bit. Let me show you what he said, speaking to the Gator Club, or whatever they call their booster clubs down there. He was in Daytona Beach, the Florida Gators Club down there in Daytona. According to Gatorsports.com, here's the quote from Dan Mullen. Now, this is meant to be kind of one of those red meat things that you toss out to your constituency, but Georgia does get caught up in this. We'll show it to folks. Let me read it. He says, we have 8 home games this year. We're the University of Florida. If we play in the state, it's a home game. Last year, we had a home game in Tallahassee. This year, we have one in Orlando. Now, the last part of that, as quoted by Gatorsports.com from Florida coach Dan Mullen, is meant to be a jab at Florida State, who they beat in Tallahassee a year ago, and meant to be a jab at Miami, whom they play in Orlando to start this season. The honest truth is, Florida probably will have a lot more fans in Orlando against Miami than the Hurricanes will, and that's probably a reasonable case to be made. If you go and win in your opponent stadium, I guess you can call that a home game, although there clearly were more Florida State fans there that day than Florida fans, but whatever gets you the applause and the moment, I'm sure Florida fans ate that up. But what gets caught up in this is the whole notion of 8 home games. Sounds like that Mullen's also counting the trip to Jacksonville to play Georgia. Now, on its face, this is patently untrue, and I'll give you more examples even from Mullen, how he's changed his tune on this in a moment. But my point in bringing this up on the program today is not to bag on Mullen, which I have a bunch over the last few days and will continue to do that because I enjoy doing it. My point is not to get all up in arms about what Mullen says about Georgia because, let's face it, Mullen has said a lot of dumb stuff when it comes to Georgia. My point is, for someone who likes Georgia, Florida, and Jacksonville and wants to preserve the heritage of this unique rivalry game played on a neutral site, that Dan Mullen calling it a Florida home game is not helping anything, because there are a pocket of Georgia fans who believe that is exactly what it is, that it does require additional travel for Georgia, and it's not such a travel burden for Florida. And at this day and age under Kirby Smart, I think the travel issue's probably been rectified just a bit. But in terms of mileage from the home campuses, it's obviously farther from Athens than it is from Gainesville, where Florida calls its home. A lot of Georgia fans say for that reason alone, this rivalry should not be played in Jacksonville every single year. You're essentially gifting Florida by playing this in Florida's home state every single year. And Dan Mullen's not helping things. So either Mullen is playing what we kind of joke about sometimes as, you know, 3D chess. You know, maybe this is part of his strategy to move this game on campus. But I do believe Mullen's words here are going to move public opinion just a bit. More Georgia fans are now going to say, see, even Dan Mullen thinks it's a Florida home game. But to be fair and balanced and be completely accurate here, Mullen calling this a Florida home game now, not exactly in keeping with what he said on this in the past. In fact, as recently as this year, he admitted that, no, it's not a Florida home game. There aren't more Florida fans there. He uses the same phrase everybody else always uses. He talks about the 50-50 split. In fact, here is Mullen on that point.
Obviously a fun game, great game to be a part of. Florida-Georgia is always such a huge game. And you look at it this year, right, we have the College Game Day, SEC Nation there. You get the CBS National Game of the Week. So it's going to be pretty special. I know it's a lot of fun. For me, it's one of the great scenes in all of college football. You come over the Hart Bridge and you come into Jacksonville right there. And, I mean, all the tailgating, just a sea of people. The stadium split down the middle is pretty exciting and a lot of fun.
In fact, not to put too fine a point on this, but the whole idea that Jacksonville's a home game for Florida, based on Mullen's own description from there, that seems to not quite be accurate. And Kirby Smart himself, after the 19-point Georgia win, I guess we can count this as a road win for UGA's resume last season. But even after that game, Kirby Smart was also talking about the impressive showing of Georgia fans in that game. Here's Kirby.
First of all, the environment in this game was probably the best of the 3 years that I've coached in it. It was thank our fans because they stood behind us, and a lot of passion and energy in those stands. And those fans follow us everywhere, and I appreciate what they do.
So the idea that this is a Florida home game is ridiculous based on what Kirby Smart said immediately after the game and what Dan Mullen said right before the game. This is clearly not a pro-Florida crowd in Jacksonville for this game, and as someone who wants to defend the honor of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, I feel it's appropriate to say that. But what's more important from Kirby Smart, not those words you just heard, it's actually a different quote from Kirby Smart. And this is why I fear that Dan Mullen calling this a Florida home game may one day sour some Georgia fans on keeping this game in Jacksonville every single year. I have a sneaking suspicion that Kirby Smart wouldn't mind seeing this game moved as well. I have a sneaking suspicion that he wouldn't mind this game being played in Athens every other year and saying to Jacksonville, we'll see you when we can see you, but we got business to take care of in our home stadium. The reason why I feel that way is something that Kirby said this past year right before the Auburn game. Now, I apologize. I don't have this on audio. I don't really know why I don't have this on audio, but I don't. But I'm going to read it to you nonetheless. Here's what he said about Georgia, Florida, and Jacksonville just a few months ago. He says, yeah, absolutely it, meaning playing the game in Jacksonville, cost you a recruiting weekend. Kirby goes on to say, you don't get to have anybody. They don't get to have anybody. So our version of the LSU-Alabama game, that big home game, he says, it's held in Jacksonville, and we don't have prospects. So it's not conducive to recruiting. Absolutely it's not. It's just the way it's been done here before. Listen to that phrase. He says, it's just the way it's been done here before. It's just not great for recruiting because you lose a home game every other year and it just comes with it. But it certainly helps to have more home games. How can you listen to Kirby Smart right there and not come away really feeling that maybe Kirby Smart wouldn't mind Jacksonville moving to an Athens-Gainesville rotation? And Dan Mullen saying what he said, I think it kind of puts this rivalry game in the neutral site kind of on thin ice. Now, for a lot of Georgia fans, that may be what they want. For me, I do like the tradition. I'm just not sure how much longer this tradition is going to be able to be preserved. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us live on video today. 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon as well on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and more from some very interesting content this morning on 960 The Ref a little later on in our program today. And we'll say hello to you on a podcast, wherever you find them, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player. And we'll post the show every day for you at the worldfamousdognation.com. We are just really glad you have found us today on Dog Nation Daily. As I told you, or I told the video audience before the show started, we're going to have a fun guest in the program today. His name is George Schroeder. He's a national college football writer for USA Today. He was in Athens for G-Day on Saturday. He was one of the guest officials. What's it like to have to do that job that we complain about other people doing during the fall? Well, George will tell us about that, and he'll also share some of his thoughts on what he saw from the Bulldogs coming up a little bit later on, too. We'll talk to George Schroeder from USA Today coming up in just a moment. Before that, let's go around the doghouse here. It's presented today by our friends at Online Trading Academy. And, you know, we just talked a lot about Georgia home games, the fact that maybe one day the Georgia-Florida game may be a home game for a UGA. Well, there's certainly a reasonable point to be made that there's never been a better time to play as many big games as you can inside Sanford Stadium in Athens. In fact, go back and look at the last 2 years. Georgia's undefeated at home in each of the last two seasons and has done so in pretty impressive fashion. You know, in fact, to go back to Kirby Smart here for a moment, before another rivalry game that Georgia played this past fall against Georgia Tech, I thought Kirby did a great job of laying out the philosophy that exists at Georgia right now of defending that home territory, making Sanford Stadium a really tough place to play. I thought Kirby Smart did a good job of laying out just how crucial that is for the Georgia program and just how much fans help contribute to that. Here's what Kirby said before Georgia Tech last November.
That's been a message all year. It's not been about Tech, obviously. It's been about the teams that have been championship teams that have defended their home turf. We've got a bulletin board about it. You know, when you win your games at home, it gives you a much better chance of winning the East. When you win your games at home, it gives you a much better chance of winning the SEC. And we've talked about that all along, and we want to continue to do that. And I think that's a big part of it, not because it's Tech, but because it's our home stadium. And we want our fans to come out, support these guys, even over Thanksgiving break. It's critical that we have the momentum and the fan base behind us to make it an advantage for us.
So that's what Kirby Smart says. It's really important to do. Now, Georgia went out and did that against Georgia Tech and has done that against everybody over the last 2 years. And apparently the nation is noticing. I saw this tweet on Twitter this week, I guess quoting 24/7 Sports. I saw this from an account known as CFB Home, but it's 24/7 Sports who brings this out. And apparently, according to 24/7 Sports, based on whatever criteria they're using, they are now going to call Georgia as the number two home field advantage in all of college football, behind just Clemson, the reigning national champions, ahead even of LSU, Penn State, Texas A&M, programs like that. Alabama's on here at number eight. Auburn, by the way, doesn't even make this list in the top ten. So Georgia is at number two. Now, the one question I asked yesterday when we were doing some of our conversation on video with our commenters, how many Georgia fans really believe this is true? Because I have heard a level of skepticism, I guess, from some Georgia fans that Georgia really does have the number two home field advantage in all of college football. After all, that's kind of a subjective claim. There's not, you know, really a whole lot of objectivity to that. But Kirby Smart, clearly, from based on what we just heard from him a moment ago, seems to believe that's a step that Georgia's taken over the last couple of years. I think later on the program, we may talk just a little bit more about this. I thought that was a pretty interesting opinion being shared from 24/7 Sports, and it's kind of interesting to see Georgia rank as high on that list as it did. For now, though, let me remind you that Around the Doghouse is brought to you by our friends at Online Trading Academy. By now, hopefully you know what they do. They give you the opportunity to make the best decision you can possibly make. That's the decision to invest in yourself by learning how to make money in the markets. Really, all kinds of trading styles, all kinds of asset classes. That's what Online Trading Academy gives you a chance to do. So please find them on the line at tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. That's Trading Academy with a D, tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. And you can learn how to make the markets work for you and make money there, both in the classroom and online. Check out tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. All right, we'll have more on what we were just saying a moment ago. We'll also preview how Georgia Bulldogs could fare in the NFL draft, which begins tonight. That's all later on the program. For now, though, as promised, let's talk to George Schroeder from USA Today. And he is a terrific college football writer for a long time at USA Today. He was also on hand for G-Day on Saturday as one of the guest officials there. Listen, I'm as guilty as anybody about complaining about officiating, but I think we'd all find out if we did the job that George had to do on Saturday. It's not as easy as it can sometimes look. George, thanks for being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. We really appreciate your time and look forward to your insight. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I guess let me start off with this. So you're a replay official on Saturday, up during in the replay booth for the game. Do I have that correct?
Yes, you do.
So, you know, I am as frustrated as anybody from time to time about how sometimes I feel like in college football, replay just has a hard time getting the call right, even with a chance to see it on video. And it sounds like from kind of reading your assessment of the situation and kind of being there in the moment, it's not as easy as it looks on TV, is it?
Well, no. I mean, my guess is that goes for most jobs, you know, whether it's the ones we're all paying attention to as sports fans or just about anything else. It's not as easy as it sort of looks, and there's a lot that goes into it. And I think I kind of intuitively knew that about the replay officiating situation, but now I really know it. And it is a complex process that requires a lot of first of all, a lot of knowledge that most of us don't actually have. That's why they use sort of the retired officials model, or the guys who've been officials on the field for some length of time at a high level. And then it requires kind of an ability to process a ton of information in a really quick manner. And we all sort of focus on the ones that take 90 seconds, and we're all sort of, you know, twiddling our thumbs and sitting on our hands and wondering why they can't figure this out. And there are those, obviously, and believe me, they're looking at all sorts of different angles and doing other things that we're not even thinking about. But I found it fascinating just how much they watch between every single play of the play before. Even when you're like, you know, you and I didn't see anything in that play to even look at, which is most plays, and yet they're looking at it from two or three different angles just because they need to check two or three different things. And you know, it's one thing to do with Kirby Smart and the Bulldogs, who do this weird, odd thing sometimes called huddling and stuff. It's another thing to do it, you know, with these teams that play fastball and you know, every 9 seconds they're you know, clicking off another play. So thank you, Kirby, for the huddle. from one guy who's not very good as a replay official. I don't know how those guys would do it if he was running the hurry up all game long.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Now, in a spring game situation, you're not going to get booed one way or another, but one of the things I've always assumed about being an official is that, you know, the act of being watched would make watching the game a little harder to do, knowing there's going to be a strong reaction one way or another to whatever call you make. And for a replay official, that's also true as well. Did you get the sensation of doing this job that people are watching you as you also watched this? Because to me, that would be one of the toughest parts about being a game day referee or an official in the replay booth.
Well, I did not get that so much this year in the replay booth. A year ago, I was a back judge in the, you know, there were all my media colleagues were down on the field in the black and white vertical stripes trying out their hands as officials. And a year ago, at the South Carolina spring game, I was a back judge, and I did sort of get that feeling there. Although the spring game obviously is the right time to try it, and the, you know, it's so much more relaxed. I suppose there were those fans of the red team who were lifelong fans of the red team and didn't really like the black team, right? It's not quite the same.
Right,
not quite.
But
in the replay booth, I didn't feel the same. I didn't feel quite the same pressure even that I did the year before. Not that I didn't feel pressure to get it right, but there's just, to me, there's a level of,
sure,
not everybody's looking at me on every single play, and I'm not sure that was the case as a back judge, but it kind of felt that way.
So I'm not sure, you know, how much of the overall experience you got to absorb while you're doing what you're doing, but I think the one thing that you would agree with is that G-Day at Georgia, the spring game in general, is still a pretty big deal, and I guess I'm kind of curious about your thoughts about spring games overall. It seems to me that some programs around the country have kind of de-emphasize them a bit. I gather that some coaches don't think it's an exercise worth going through quite as much. But for a place like Georgia, they like making it into a show and they host a bunch of recruits. I guess as a national college football writer, what is your overall opinion of the value of spring games and the place they should have on the college football calendar?
Well, for fans, they're a reasonable facsimile of football, which is great for all of us. But, you know, let's be honest, most of the time the coaches aren't thinking about the fans. They're thinking about recruiting, and they're thinking also about sort of what kind of evaluation and assessment they get of their own team. And from that last standpoint, it's maybe not one of 15 spring practices, which is what they like to sort of minimize it as, but it's certainly kind of one of three scrimmages, and maybe it's the most important of those. But it's what you mentioned about what Kirby does with it, and what there's, you know, 5 or 10 other programs around the country who are often competing for similar recruits, and with the acceleration of recruiting because of the early recruiting calendars, become more important than ever before, I think, to turn it into a showcase, if possible, for recruits. That's why you hear these guys wanting huge crowds. That's why sometimes they have a big concert. You know, part of that's for the recruits. Yeah. A lot of it's to grab the fans, to get them to come in. And it's a huge recruiting day. And so it is a big, big deal. For the programs that treat it as such. And I don't think it's quite so easy to say, okay, if you've got that coach who's saying it's not a big deal, it's because he's not in on those recruits. It's not that simple. It's just it's a different philosophy, and it may well be as right as the other guys. It feels odd to hear guys de-emphasizing it, because when you look at Tom Herman at Texas and Kirby Smart at Georgia and Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, and you see what Alabama has done in the past, and, you know, and some of that's just fans being excited, but a lot of it is there's some actual efforts made to get them out there.
Yeah.
It's because they're trying to turn it into a recruiting showcase type of, you know, it's not a game. It's not like having a guy come to your campus in September or October, but in April he can get kind of a reasonable facsimile of what it feels like.
So you know the storyline around Georgia. This is a program of the last couple of years that has been really, really close to breaking through with a national championship, and yet its two chief competitors are essentially next-door neighbors. You got Alabama and the SEC, and obviously a lot's been said about these two games. These two teams have played the last couple of years, and of course, you know, Clemson has a recruiting threat and a looming threat where Georgia get back to playoff kind of is a foe to be dealt with as well. Do you get a sense from Georgia thus far this offseason, whether it be just the things you've absorbed or what you saw from Athens on Saturday, about how well it's positioned to kind of go and take on these challengers that it hasn't quite yet vanquished? What's your sense of how Georgia fits into that pecking order as we move towards the season?
Well, in that particular pecking order, you have to put it behind Clemson, Alabama. Alabama, Clemson, you pick the order. You have to put Georgia behind those guys, but not far behind them. And And I look at it in two ways. One, when you look at the Georgia team physically, sort of just sort of how they stand out as they step off the bus, that kind of a look, which isn't always a true gauge, but it's not a bad gauge either. They look like those other two teams. And there are very few other teams around the country that maybe look that way. Ohio State has those kinds of athletes. And it kind of makes me think that, you know, 2017, Georgia was maybe a little bit ahead of schedule, or could have been a lot ahead of schedule, and it sort of reset our expectations. In 2018, it could have happened. In 2019 might really well have been the year that a lot of people were pointing to as to when this is when the roster could be filled out if all the recruiting goes as planned, and this is when you might have the talent and the depth to really be there. And instead they've sort of been there or almost there earlier. But this feels like a year when if you're going to have a breakthrough, it could be this year. And I think you got to be patient because, look, everybody's looking up in the SEC at Nick Saban. It isn't just Georgia. It's everybody. Georgia, at least these last couple of years, has been more consistently close to coulda, woulda, shoulda, maybe ought to have beaten Alabama than anybody has, at least on a consistent basis. And so I think you've got to have some patience, but it does feel like this is a good year, and it feels like Georgia's really, really close to doing it. I mean, you just got to take your swings, and at some point, you connect, right? I mean, goodness, if the Bulldogs had been able to finish, we might have a whole different story these last couple of years.
You get a sense that go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
George.
Go ahead.
No, I said, do you get a sense the SEC East is ready to be more competitive this year? You know, Georgia has won each of its division games by two touchdowns or more in each of the last two seasons. You know, I still see a pretty big gap between Georgia and most of this division going into 2019. Obviously, Florida's going to have a very high ranking preseason. Do you see the gap closing in the division at all?
Not yet. I do think Florida's going to be better, and I think Dan Mullen was a terrific hire, and he'll get them, back to competitive. But I do think the East still trails the West in terms of depth. Georgia is as good as anybody in the conference, unless we go back to the previous question, maybe not named Alabama. They may be better than Alabama. We'll see. But the rest of the East is not terrific yet. Tennessee's not there. We could kind of go down the list. Kentucky was a nice team, but they were just a nice team, and they're going to take a step back, I think. And the other thing I would say is this. It's one thing to talk about how easy Georgia's had it in the East, and you mentioned the double-digit scores. Go look at what Alabama's scores are against the West. Mm-hmm. As good as the West, by reputation is, Alabama has pretty much had its way with the West in almost every game over this run they've had. So, but in answer to your question, no. I mean, when you look at the East, Georgia's clearly the class of the East, and you never know what happens in a rivalry game in a neutral site with a team like Florida. It's kind of like that Oklahoma Texas thing, right? I mean,
yeah.
Doesn't matter who's better. Sometimes those games are just sort of weird games, right? But if you just chalk it up or write it out on paper, let me mix a few metaphors here. It's hard for me to see a scenario where Georgia doesn't emerge from the East and play in the SEC title game.
Let me squeeze in one more final thing before we let you go. You had good reporting at USAtoday.com the other day in Tuscaloosa to get a chance to be with Nick Saban on the heels of what is a hip replacement surgery for him, I guess. And it sounds like he's back at work. And for a lot of people, this is really surprising that this sounds like a pretty severe procedure, and it sounds like he's going to try to keep it business as usual. George, from your perspective, is that really possible?
Yeah, I think it is, and it's on two levels. One, first of all, I think Nick's a robot, so you got that. But no, and I'm kidding. But the way they do these hip surgeries now, apparently you can be back up and moving around immediately, and it's typically an outpatient surgery. A lot of people are walking out of the hospital, and you can sort of get back to your regular life without golf or running or whatever for a while. But that's the first thing. The second thing is, look, this is the first time that we have seen. The one thing about Nick Saban, who's 67, he turned 68 on October 31st. We all know what day that is, Halloween. So you draw whatever conclusions you want. But the one thing about him is he's always felt like he's 67 going on 57. When he was 62, it felt like he was going on 52. And I always look at it, he's the same age as Mack Brown. And when Mack Brown retired, you look at those two guys, and you thought, one of them looks 10 years younger, and it isn't Mack Brown. And so I've always thought that vitality has been a piece of sort of the puzzle when it comes to sort of the aura around Nick Saban, and there's obviously so much more than that, but vitality has been a big deal. This is the first time that we've really sort of seen sort of a, oh, wow, there's an aging process going on. And so it was interesting when we talked, he made a point to me to say, the doctor said this isn't a geriatric issue, a geriatric hip, it's more of an athlete hip, and it just sort of comes on after years of grinding. And I don't doubt that that's true. I also don't doubt that that's a piece of the message he wants out there. And I say all that to say, him being up and about and them taking pictures of him standing behind his desk, looking over the myriad details of things that he has to do, you know, on a Tuesday or Wednesday in late April, isn't about showing that he's working, except that it sort of shows there's nothing wrong with Nick Saban. He's still really, you know, vital. And it all goes back to the very first thing you and I talked about, which is you want those recruits to see him as, you know, young and energetic. I think that's part of the messaging that's going on here. I don't doubt that it's actually the case. I do think it's a message they really want out.
I think it's really interesting, George. It's great reporting. And for folks who want to find out more of the work that you're doing, USA Today, how can we find you online?
Well, I mean, you know, at usatoday.com, or follow me on Twitter, which is just at George Schroeder, and it's E-E-O-R-G-E and then S-C-H-R-O-E-D-E-R. And I appreciate that. But, hey, listen, I actually don't get to spend a lot of time in Athens because we have a guy who lives in Atlanta. So last weekend in Athens, even though it was maybe not the Chamber of Commerce weather for late April, was a terrific experience and a great chance to sort of catch up on a week when there aren't quite as many people in town as there are. Let me put it this way. There are so many people in town on a real game weekend that I have to stay in Atlanta. So it was great to be in Athens. So I really enjoyed it.
Well, listen, George, I'm glad that Athens showed you hospitality. We appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily. A really fun conversation. Thanks for your insight, and we'll hopefully look forward to catching up with you soon.
Hey, thank you, guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff there from George Schroeder. George is a good writer. It's a guy that I've read for a long time. It's our first time having him on Dog Nation Daily. But I did want to get a chance this week to talk to one of those guys. We had a chance to be one of those special guest referees for, in this case, replay official for the G-Day game, because I think it's really good insight. And as I've told you all from time to time, I do think it's interesting to kind of go outside the bubble of Dog Nation from time to time to find out what folks kind of around the country think about Georgia, because I think it helps us just get a sense of really where Georgia does rank in this pecking order here. And it's not a surprise to hear him say, oh, I'd still have Alabama and Clemson ahead of Georgia right now. As it stands, that's what the consensus opinion nationally is going to be. But that's another national guy, and we've had a few of these lately, who says, no, I'm not completely buying the hype about this being a wide-open SEC East or about a Florida stepping up and being ready to challenge right now. You heard George say those two simple words, not yet, in terms of that being the case. And I think that's an important part of that national conversation as well. We'll do our SEC 3 here coming up in just a moment. Let me remind you, though, that we are coming down to the wire on what has been an awesome week around Dog Nation. I'm talking about the very first ever Georgia Giving Week from our friends at the UGA Alumni Association. A real chance to show the world just how much dogs care about the university and just how loud the dogs can bark, as they like to say. It is Georgia Giving Week here, and it's a chance to support the UGA Alumni Association. Now, this is also a terrific incentive for you on this. Right now, when you make your gift as a part of Giving Week with the UGA Alumni Association, they got a couple things for you. You get a limited run Georgia Pennant Magnet, and you also get a 20% discount from the UGA bookstore. Now, y'all know I love the UGA bookstore, so it's a great chance to get that. And also, this Georgia Pennant Magnet sounds pretty cool as well. So it's a chance to propel UGA forward, change the lives of the students on this campus right now. So please be a part of the first ever UGA Alumni Association Giving Week. The website to go to is this, givingweek.uga.edu. It's givingweek.uga.edu. There's just 2 days left to give as a part of this campaign. So please go to the website, givingweek.uga.edu, for a whole lot more on that. All right, tonight is the NFL draft. And I guess the big question from a Georgia fan standpoint is DeAndre Baker going to be taken in the first round? Now, we talked at Dog Nation. I know Chip Towers wrote about this. I did a DN90 on this the other day about this campaign that seemed to emerge against Baker about whatever may or may not have happened in the week of the Sugar Bowl. I thought it was good that Davin Bellamy stood up to defend Baker on this. I think Baker was always a popular teammate with the UGA guys. I don't necessarily buy McShay's take on this, not because I believe that McShay is lying, but I believe there's a really good chance that whoever talked to McShay about Baker was also lying, because there is a lot of lying that leads up to the start of the NFL draft. There's a pretty well verifiable history of that. However, I'm not enough of an NFL draftnik to know if Baker's dropping in the draft because of those so-called rumors, or if there's just a deep crop of cornerbacks and that drops him down the pecking order. The one thing I do want on the record right now, and this is not, I mean, it's going to sound like Homer talk, but it's not, because the truth is I don't really care about the NFL all that much. But I do believe that DeAndre Baker will be a better pro than Greedy Williams. And the one, Greedy Williams, the cornerback from LSU, who I would say that Williams has a really good chance of being the first cornerback taken, right? So Baker may be one of the ones that doesn't go in the first round. Greedy may be the first cornerback taken off the board. But the one thing that I keep showing, when I do read the draft analysis, when I see some of these guys talking on TV, the one thing that seems to come up a lot, and I feel like I've seen this with my own eyes, Baker's not the biggest guy in the world, but he is really tough. There is no doubt in my mind, having watched these guys in the SEC the last couple of years, DeAndre Baker's the better tackler of the two. Now, in the NFL, obviously, it's a league about defending wide receivers, you know, cornerbacks, wide receivers, and that league seem to get more important every single year, and so that's ultimately how Baker's going to be judged. But you got to be on the field for everything else as well. When it comes down to it, Baker's a better tackler than Greedy. We know that Baker is good in pass coverage, hasn't given up a touchdown in like 2 years or some, you know, crazy thing like that. So put it on the record for me. I believe that Baker ends up being the better overall pro. I'll tell you the other thing that, from a Georgia fan standpoint, watching some of these SEC guys in this thing tonight, dynamic pass rushers, a real story here. Quinnen Williams, Josh Allen. Williams, obviously, from Alabama. Josh Allen from Kentucky, going early in this first round tonight. You know, Georgia has made a big point of wanting to be better with the so-called havoc plays, being more tackles for loss, more sacks, things like that. You have to have seemingly a superstar player emerge in that regard to get that done. Clemson, not an SEC team, but another example of this. They're going to have a ton of pass rushers go early in this draft, and that's the key for Georgia. You want more sacks, you want more tackles for loss, you want more so-called havoc, then you're going to have to find a way to have superstar guys emerge the way that Williams has for Alabama, Allen did for Kentucky, you know, the Farrell and all those guys from Tennessee. Clemson, Tennessee only wishes. All those guys for Clemson. You're going to have to find a way to get that done. We'll make that your SEC through. I got a lot of business I want to take care of just for a moment. So let me see if I can kind of squeeze a lot of this into a little bit of time here. If you were watching or listening to the show earlier, we did our Around the Doghouse presented by Online Trading Academy. We talked a little bit about, you know, Kirby Smart's belief that one of the hallmarks of a good program is defending your own turf, being really good in a home field environment. 24/7 Sports recently ranked Georgia as the number two home field advantage in all of college football right now, and I'm assuming they're basing this mostly on the fact that Georgia's winning its home games, and after all, what could matter more than that? But I thought it was really funny, and we talked about this in our R.S. Andrews Cooldown on yesterday's show, which is a video comment section we kind of do after the regular broadcast of Dog Nation Daily is done. It was amazing to me how many Georgia fans there were like, Georgia's home field advantage is kind of okay. Georgia's winning its home games, but stadium could be louder. The music that's played in the stadium could be better. And I kind of get where some of that's coming from. I do think this has been an evolution that has occurred over time. I guess my point in bringing that up off the top of the show was to say that I do think that reputations can change. Let's face it. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, into the start of the Richt era, I'm not so sure that Sanford Stadium was a really tough place to play. You know, Georgia won most of its home games because Georgia's kind of a winning program. But was Georgia the kind of stadium that made opposing fans afraid? Probably was not. But it's important to note that when things change, we should notice. And go back and look at the big home games that Georgia's played in the Kirby Smart era alone. Think about Auburn in 2016. Think about Mississippi State in 2017. Pick any number of moments from the 2019 season. You know, not a great slate of home games, but a few moments where, from my mind, I've gone to a lot of these stadiums I think Georgia right now is just as loud as any. Now, the winning seems to be taking care of itself because Georgia's a good team. But as far as that atmosphere that Georgia fans want to create, I think Dog fans should give themselves a little bit of credit because, from my mind, it certainly looks like Georgia is on its way to creating that and to kind of shift gears out of the clutch and talk about something completely different. I loved Connor Ronnie's piece at DogNation.com this morning, also kind of about Georgia fans as well, and their response to what has been going on with Luke Ford. And we actually got a sense of finality on this yesterday, and I just think this is despicable. You know, Ford, as you know, former four-star signee at Georgia as a part of its 2018 class, but as a tight end, didn't play a ton last year. He's got a family situation he's dealing with, a sick relative, and wanted to transfer back to his home state and go play for Lovie Smith at Illinois. Well, for a long time, we didn't hear anything from the NCAA on the Luke Ford transfer. Well, now it comes out yesterday, and then we got Ford on Twitter on this. He says, my waiver got denied. Thanks for all your support. It's all in the Lord's timing. So Ford's trying to keep a good attitude about this, but the NCAA denies his appeal for immediate eligibility, even though it's granted it to, obviously, Justin Fields and Tate Martell, the quarterback now at Miami. This would seem to be a very uneven way of handling this and seemingly preferential treatment for high-profile cases. And in this instance, what I think the NCAA probably thought was going to be a pretty low-profile, very, you know, no one's going to notice a tight end at Illinois. Well, what the NCAA didn't realize is this was a guy that had played at Georgia. Georgia's a massively engaged fan base. There's going to be a lot of uproar and outrage about this. I'm not sure the uproar and the outrage is going to do anything. I'm not sure it changes anything about this. I think the NCAA, I think its greatest asset from its own perspective is the fact that it has zero shame. It simply does not care how bad anyone thinks that it is. It doesn't care how frequently anyone notices its incongruent way of handling things. Just look at the kid glove light treatment that North Carolina's basketball program has gotten. You see an example of that. This is a shameless body. And so the fact that they've done wrong by Luke Ford, I don't think anybody associated with the NCAA loses any sleep about this whatsoever. But Georgia fans have noticed, and at the very least, they are going to call out the NCAA for what seems to be an inexplicable level of contradictions in terms of how it's handling its transfers here and the transfer portal stuff. And, you know, for a lot of people, there's just very little justifiable reason to support the NCAA as a body when it can't even get something as simple as this right. Let me also get ready to wrap up the program here, and I will tell you as we do so that on 960 The Ref this morning, there was a little news involving the Diamond Dogs. 960 The Ref is our radio partner there in Athens, and this morning, Georgia baseball coach Scott Strickland was on the show, and according to Strickland on 960 The Ref, Emerson Hancock, who is the star ace pitcher for the Georgia Bulldogs, he's not going to pitch this weekend at Mississippi State. The quote from Strickland here is, he just needs a little bit of a breather. It's what's best for him and our team. Just some soreness. He is fine. So I'm going to take Strickland at his word on that, but that's definitely eye-opening to hear no Emerson Hancock for Georgia in a really tough road series at Mississippi State. That's going to be a tough one for the Diamond Dogs there, and we certainly wish Hancock well, and hopefully by next weekend he'll be back and in better shape. One thing that continues to be in very good shape, though, is our Gatorator update. Here around Dog Nation, we believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater. In 908 days, that's how long it's been, so those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. That's good news. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily. And on...